Jam 92 says, damn, okay, 49ers. Not even Paul Blart could help the Eagles. I guess Paul Blart is a security official.
You don't even know who Paul Blart is.
I don't,
you know,
wait.
No, it's a mall cop. It's a movie. You haven't seen it.
I thought that was the guy's name.
That's right. We're here to learn football. That's why you're here. We're going to talk football. You want to talk movie references? Don't talk to Ahmed Fareed.
No idea.
He's clueless. He really thought Paul Blart was an official security guard somewhere. He thought it was actually Dom DeSandro. He was like, damn, that's his real name, Paul Blart. There's Paul Blart, mall cop. You seen King of Queens ever? You ever seen that
TV show? I have
seen
that, yeah.
It's a very good show. I would recommend it. And your adult, you know, the movie Mall Cop, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you I recommend that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right? So save your life. Yeah, there's way better movies that you haven't seen that you should start with.
The name's even in the poster. Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Right. Exactly right. And it just shows that there is a spot in the social world that is very prevalent to most people in the world,
yeah,
and not even on your radar.
Not
it's quite impressive.
All.
Like, it's really impressive.
So there. So
do you
there,
even know who wins Best Picture at the Oscars ever?
Absolutely not.
And you don't even watch the Oscars?
No, I don't.
Wow.
No.
That's amazing.
There's just too much other stuff going on. I was doing college basketball last night. I got to talk to you about NFL every, you know, twice a week. I don't have time for movies right now. But it was funny. By the way, Pete knows it got 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. So you're right.
Don't waste your time. Don't waste your time.
If you don't know who Paul Blart is, you've actually saved an hour and a half or 2 hours of
Save
your
life.
there were some people that wrote me and tweeted or commented in. They were like, I've lost respect for Ahmed. He didn't even know who Paul Blart was, which I would say this. If you lost respect for me because of that, you're not a homie because you haven't been listening. You should have lost respect for me a long time ago.
Right. When it comes to that,
with all
right.
this stuff, you should know by this point.
This is the guy who watched like parts of The Godfather and was like,
It doesn't stand the test of time.
Oh,
is what I think
gosh,
what I
you're crazy. You are crazy.
It was really long. Pete's right on that. My movie takes are not good. And you could argue my football takes aren't that good either.
I think your football takes are great. You're great. It's good to be here. It's Wednesday, December 6th. We got football tomorrow.
Yes.
It's real December football. We got some good ones to talk about today. We got lots of good subjects to break down today.
So, yes, we do. We have what the fuck happened. Oh, my gosh.
You just said, what the fuck? Ahmed just said a swear word, and he didn't even mean to.
It was supposed to be
his
day.
He was literally, oh, my gosh. Can we play that back? Can you rewind that and play that again?
I am.
Well, now we know.
I am getting a little.
That
is
the first time ever I've heard you swear in life.
That's.
Let alone you did it on a live microphone. Now that's going to be the opening of our Sunday show.
Yeah.
Our Sunday podcast. Please make sure that is clipped off. He's embarrassed, everybody who's just listening out there.
I'm a little hot.
The cheeks are red.
I'm a little hot.
And
right now.
It was so. You might have actually snuck by if I didn't see your face.
Yes. Like, I should have just kept going.
Your face gave it away because I was kind of reading the rundown and like thinking of some things, and your face made me realize that you just said the F word.
Oh my
what
gosh.
A fucking idiot you
I
are!
Know. I don't know how this. I don't know how this happened. That'll never happen again.
Yeah, sure.
But hey, maybe now I broke the seal.
Yeah,
maybe
you might
now
as well just let it fly.
You're right. Now we just
go
let
ahead.
It go.
Give us another
Kristen,
one.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not going to do that. Actually, and maybe it was so slight, and I think I said it kind of quiet, so I don't even know if it showed up on microphone.
No, okay, we got it.
Hear.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Don't you worry.
What the F happened on Wednesday here? Treasure Hunters. We're going to talk about the best coaching job. I might not recover from this, to be quite
honest. You're stumbling and stammering now.
I might have to take like a
45-minute
break.
You're just Ron Burgundy, and you read the you don't even understand that either.
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Okay, you have seen that?
Yes,
I'm Ron Burgundy. You read the teleprompter no matter what.
I am all thrown off. I'm going to blame this, though, to a late night last night. I said I was doing my
basketball,
last night. And so as I was getting ready, it was like 15 minutes before we were going to go on.
Yeah.
My Apple Watch starts like blowing up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, it must be a text from my
look at
from
that
my
guy.
Wife.
This looking
is like, if you're watching on Peacock or YouTube, I'm just like, oh, let me check what's coming in on my watch.
Love the tie shirt combo.
Thank you. The purple, when they hook me up with purple, I feel like that might be my best
good
color.
Good color for you.
Thank you. But I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, what's happening here? That's like 13 buses in a row. And they were the notes from Chris. If you're watching right now on Peacock or YouTube, you can see that on my watch, which is actually it's a decent sized watch.
It's unbelievable,
and you can see the whole page there.
Holy shit! Big
what is
watch.
That? That is that's Packers O versus Chiefs D.
Right? People will be able to zoom in on that and read a little
bit. Pete texts, he's like, oh my God, do you actually look at the notes on your watch? And I don't, but I think I could make out a few words there. I think it actually is clear
I think you could too.
To where I could read some of the notes. No, that is not how I do my scouting, but I thought it was funny that all the pictures were showing up on my watch as I was getting ready. So we've got all that information for you, and we will start with maybe the statement of the year so far. I think Pete notes here, and I think that's a good way to put it. The 49ers defeating the Eagles. You looked at both sides of the ball on this one because we want to dive deeper. We don't just want to take what we saw from the TV copy, and you were doing Football Night in America while this game was happening anyway.
Right.
So you needed to sit down with pen, pad, notebook.
Digest this again.
So let's start with the 49ers offense and the Eagles defense. Let me start a little broad here,
too. Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of people made this about, you know, the 49ers just had just more rest. They're coming off 9 days rest, a blowout win at Seattle. The Eagles, just 6 days rest. They had that overtime game against Buffalo.
Sure.
The defense had 95 snaps in that one. So,
from what you Chiefs the week before that on a Monday night, right?
Yes.
I mean, they've had two physical long games.
From what you saw from the film, were the Eagles, and the defense has not been great this year, was the Eagles a little slower, sluggish? Was the rest a factor in this in your
you
mind?
You know, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because I saw some of that, too. And listen, you know, just rest a factor? Yeah, I mean, of course it is. I mean, we know that. I can't say that it looked like that on film. And as I think you see from my notes, early on in the football game, it seemed like the Eagles were kind of the team that was fresh and flying around and like kind of like, hey, 49ers, how dare you come back in here and be disrespectful to us? We're going to show you. And they controlled, as we know, the whole first quarter of the football game. So that's where it'd be hard for me to, you know, look at it and go, oh, man, that was, you know, a big, big effect on the football game. You know, as the game goes on, do they get tired, whatever? You know, I don't know. I don't think so. But either way, it's been a tough stretch for them. I'm certainly aware of that, and it didn't, you know, it didn't help them, I will say. But I don't sit here and look at that and go, oh, that's the main reason they lost the football game. I would give that excuse more to a Dallas Cowboy team who played last Thursday night to go, that was their third game in 11 days. Mm. I can understand why their defense maybe looked the way they did against the Seattle Seahawks. That, to me, would be more of an example than, you know, oh, we played three games in a row that were tough. You know, Monday night, Sunday. I'm not going to, you know, totally buy into that aspect there.
All right, so then more of a factor was what the 49ers did offensively. And I've read over your notes here, and you've been very complimentary, obviously, of Kyle Shanahan, not just because he's one of your good friends out there, because you love what he does in the NFL. And I think a lot of people see that. They crack the code.
Yeah.
In a lot of games.
Yes.
They were able to crack the code in this game.
Right.
By doing what specifically?
Well, I think early on in the game, like we talked about, Philly dominated the line of scrimmage, right? I think Philly maybe came out and played a little bit more of a conservative nature on the defensive side of the ball at first. If you had to make me guess with how it looked, that I don't think the 49ers expect them to maybe play so many conservative coverages. They kind of played off, tried to keep people in front of them, almost like they did against the Miami Dolphins. And I think that caught Shanahan and the company by surprise a little bit. They called some plays early on in the game that were kind of aggressive, and they were like, whoa, wait, they're all back there. There's nothing we can do here. There's nobody open, right? So there was an adjustment period there, you know, let alone, like I said, the Eagles, their fans, the look of the night, all that. They kind of came out looking like they were a little bit in the more motivated, we're going to send a message type of football team, right? At least at first. I think it was, you know, it's that fourth drive or the third drive maybe for the San Francisco 49ers where they finally got into a rhythm. And I think the big thing was gotten a rhythm with just some short passes, right? Let's just take what they give us. Let's go from there. And then that kind of opened up, you know, Pandora's box to the rest of their offense. And they got the defense reeling a little bit. But, you know, I think the thing that I would say, you know, really got them going or the offensive thing that got them going overall, Purdy being efficient, making some big throws just to get it going. But then they run game to the left and then some game plan plays once Shanahan figured out how they were playing him with especially their 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, that really stressed Philadelphia out. And between the run and the package of plays that they have out of that personnel set, the 49ers are very hard to defend when they play 21 personnel. I'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
But they slowly but surely started to have their way in almost all facets of offensive football.
Let's get into it right now because it's something something that you noted in your notes, 21 personnel, two running backs, one tight end, kind of like an old school. Right.
Right.
You used to have like the running back and the full back. It's how they used to play.
Yes.
The 49ers use it in 37% of their offensive plays.
It's got to be a league leader,
second
right?
Second most in the NFL,
okay.
too. The Miami Dolphins.
Oh, well, there you go.
They do it 42% of
right.
the time. So, yeah, let's dive a little deeper into that. Like,
yeah.
why is that significant to you, and what do they do off of that?
I think it's different than the Dolphins and what they do, and it's because of their personnel, right? When you talk about, let's talk about the two backs, the one tight end, and the two receivers, right? The two backs, first off, and McCaffrey and Juszczyk mm-hmm. are extremely versatile. They can do everything. You know, we know they got Kittle, who's a good tight end, who, same thing, can do everything. Elite run game blocker, elite pass game catcher. And then you got the two receivers on the outside where, yeah, Ayuk is a traditional receiver, but Debo is he a running back? Is he a fullback? Is he a wide receiver? I mean, he does everything for their offense. So you play defenses going, oh, no, they're in two backs, one tight end. They're going to be able to run the ball on us. But they can get into it and go, well, now we're in 10 personnel. You know, which 10 personnel would be one back, no tight ends. And what I mean by that is they can get in shotgun and go, hey, we're going to put everybody out at receiver. No backs in the backfield. And because all five of those guys can run routes like legit receivers, Juszczyk included. You know, he's really like a pass-catching tight end who plays fullback and can do that, almost like Kittle, but a different version of that. So they can do that, let alone that 21 personnel can look like one back, one tight end, three receivers, right? And they can play all these things off of each other that really put a defense in of a bind to go, wait, they might run it and smash it down our throat, so we want to put an extra linebacker in there or an extra D lineman in there so we don't get overpowered. But then they spread the field out and they make the game fast, and you go, oh, damn, I wish we could take one of these D linemen off the field and put a nickelback back in so we can cover Debo on the, you know, the swing passes, or McCaffrey coming out of the backfield running, you know, go routes from the seam route or whatever. And that's where they really put teams in a bind and make it very hard. Their versatility out of that personnel set is unlike anybody else in football.
Run, pass, short run, short pass.
Reverses, right? Oh, wait, Debo's in the backfield. They're not going to run the ball. McCaffrey's out there at receiver. Wait, they ran the ball between the tackles with Debo. Wait, we call the pass defense because they got in that formation, yeah. right? There's just so much they can do with it. And then, of course, they start moving around and the shifts and the motions and everything like that, which, again, this is a different scheme last year than last year's Eagles football team, but the motions and the shifts from the 49ers in this football game definitely affected the Philadelphia Eagles. It affected them not so much to where they were confused. There was definitely communication and some blown assignments, but also the motions, just, you know, whether they spread the field or got one guy out of the box so now McCaffrey could be one-on-one, or Debo could be one-on-one with the linebacker over the middle of the field. The defense wasn't capable of making the proper adjustments, and between the motions and the shifts, Shanahan found a way to crack their code, as I like to say,
yeah.
and go, wait, it's cover four, but now I'm going to move this guy there and this guy there, and now it's going to basically play like man-to-man, and it's going to be Morrow in the middle, man-to-man versus McCaffrey or Debo, like I said, and of course that's advantage 49ers.
I think we have some visual evidence of some of this, at least. We have some screenshots of the plays, the first and third plays of the second touchdown drive
yeah,
here.
Right.
What
and
does this show you?
This is where they really got it rolling, right? They got the ball back, and you know, the Eagles didn't capitalize on their early momentum, like we talked about, right? Two field goal drives. They were up 6-0 and got the ball back, up 6-0 with good field position, went 3-and-out, and they had to punt the ball away, and then the 49ers went on the drive, and now here's the second drive. But you always hear me talking about, right, like tying plays together,
yep.
right? And what that means and how that works and what a good offense does are examples of it. So here's the examples. But basically, okay, you're going to see here, like, the top play is going to be end up being like basically a little swing pass to Debo Samuel with lead blockers in front of him, right? And they are in a little bit of a different formation, but watch, I want to show this how this goes to give you an idea of where this plays. You see on the top, it's tight end to the right, right? It's McCaffrey and Debo Samuel also to the right, All right. And then Brandon Ayuk's on the backside, and you can't see him there on the top of the screen. On the bottom, which is two plays later, it's the same formation, just flipped around. Okay. So let's let it play out, Pete, and let's see that next screenshot. Then the one up top. Now, again, it's the same motion, right? But Debo Samuel, yep. He kind of goes across the motion, and then he turns back, and he goes behind the quarterback. All right, so the play on the top, he's going to go behind the quarterback, and, okay, as they do that, they're going to basically, it's a toss sweep, right? They took this play from the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins scored on this play in a touchdown, and he went, wait, that's McDaniel. I do all these motions. Why don't I do this play like the Miami Dolphins and start putting in my offense? So here you go. There you see it. It looks the same, right? I'm a great play callers, great offenses.
Yep.
You know, it's the same look, but we're going to throw a curveball. It's a little window dressing and have you think all these different things. You got to communicate. Wait, they're going over here. It's going to be three receivers to one side. Oh, wait, now it's going to be a 2x2. Oh, wait, it's back. Now we're going to a 4x1, right? So all these rules are making the defense change within this movement and these shifts.
But if you saw the first play, you're just like, okay, this is just the mirror image of this play again here.
I saw the first play, and they got out on the edge, and Debo was like, he almost broke the last tackle, and he could have been gone for 60 yards. So that's in my brain. It was just two plays ago, right? So go ahead, Pete. Go to the next play, as you see, or the next screenshot. Now, the one at the top, you can see here, McCaffrey, who was the receiver to the right on the top, he's just sitting over the middle. Ayuk, who was on the top, he's sitting over the middle. And you can see now Juszczyk is basically leading. Can you see him on the top of the screen there,
yep,
Ahmed?
Yep.
44 is basically, this is a toss sweep, a lead blocking for Debo Samuel. And it's almost a lateral. It ends up being a forward pass. But Purdy throws it out there. And Debo Samuel, you know, now is in space where Juszczyk is going to block Bradbury. And now it's like, oh, it's me and Hassan Reddick one-on-one as I shoot through a gap here, and I like my chances of Debo.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw that play, and they went, whoa, you know, that's an issue. And then you could see on the play below it, they do all the same stuff before the snap. They send Debo wide going the other way, but this time they change the route combinations. This time they go, wait, we think – they'll see that Debo play. The linebackers will be over-aggressive to go, wait, we got to get over to stop Debo, which they do if you look on the bottom of the screen there. Blankenship and the middle linebacker, I think it's Stills in that one, 53, they overplay the Debo Samuel aspect, thinking, wait, I just saw this two plays ago and they gashed us, right? I got to get over there and help out. And this time they go, no, we're going to send Kittle across the field and he's going to be wide open and Brock Purdy hits him. So that's what I'm talking about when you talk about tying plays together, setting things up, you know, making things look the same, but they're a little different. And that's where Shanahan's amazing, not only with the window dressing before the plays, the movements that stress you out there, but playing plays off of each other.
Right.
Let alone the play that they ran in between those two plays was a run to the left, which he was also setting something up for that to come down the road, right? And so that's where it is. Oh, we're going to run left. We're going to run left. And then, as I told you later in the game, what's he do? He gets down close to the end zone. They've been crushing him with the run left. He goes, wait, tight end shift left. Wait, Ayuk go on motion left really fast. Wait, we're going to fake the run left to Christian McCaffrey. And then I'm going to toss the reverse to Debo Samuel. He's going to run around the right side for a touchdown. And that's where Shanahan's next level with that type of stuff.
Let's show that, because I think that was something that in your notes you didn't expect to see necessarily, the amount of times they ran to the left.
Yes.
The amount of times they ran to the left before they even ran to the right, and in total, by the end of the game, they had run left 17 times, just right 5 times here.
Right. And I think the end of the game was like
most of
the right runs.
If not all of them there. Yeah, what do you make of that? The fact that obviously that you got Trent Williams on that left side too. You feel like the stronger side of your offensive line.
There you go.
You can set up a reverse later on in the game or something to the other side once you've done that. But 17-5, that does seem lopsided more so than usual.
It is. I think it's your point though. I think is correct. I think he just went, wait, these dudes on Philadelphia are legit. Like, if we want to run the ball, I want to run the ball behind my best people where I feel like we can be successful, right? And between Trent Williams, the left tackle, and Aaron Banks, their left guard, who's a road grader, and, you know, went to Notre Dame and was that guy there and has been good at smash mouth football all along, I think they looked at that and just said, hey, if we're going to run the ball against this group, let's just run behind our best football players here. And they had, of course, little different ways in which they ran left and made things happen, but I think it was as simple as that. I don't think, you know, there's no reinventing the wheel or like, man, what was the other reason they could be doing this? Was the defensive line on that side weaker? No, there was no telling who was going to be on that side of the defensive line or what personnel was going to be on there. They just went, we're going to run behind our best horses here,
yep,
and Williams and Banks, and we'll go down fighting with our best punches, and we'll see where it goes. And, of course, they had their way, and they continued to find little ways and the C gap, you know, basically between the tight end and the left tackle to find little ways to open up holes that, again, it's not the same run every time. It looks a little different, but there's a little tweak to it. Mm-hmm. So the defense goes, oh, we got killed this way one time. All right, we got to overreact. And then they have something else that it looks the same, but it's a little different. And they go, oh, damn, now they hit it through a little bit of a different gap. And that's where the 49ers really become tough. The Eagles linebackers, right? They're not very talented. It's a team of all-stars. It's by far their weakest position on their football team. And Shanahan found ways to put pressure on them the whole game. That was one thing I think we got to hit. And to add on top of that, not only is it their weakest position, as you know, and I watch things, I go, they're also being put in sometimes the most schematically hard position, where I want to go, the biggest flaw in the defense is with the guys that are your worst players on your defense. You can't let that go down. That's got to be, you got to hide that to a degree. You can't just go, hey, we're awesome everywhere else against an awesome team and go, hey, they won't find a way to expose that. And, you know, of course, Debo and some of the other passes and the runs and the reverses and all that tested the linebackers' communication, adjustments, and, you know, they were put in some tough spots where I go, you know, I don't want to blame Nicholas Mora. I want to go, that is a really tough spot you were put in. It's like cover the receiver or cover McCaffrey. Cover the receiver or, oh, no, it's Debo Samuel. I'm stuck in a tough spot here, and that's not him. You know, he's being going to put it in a spot that's not realistic for him to succeed.
Yeah, any linebacker who has to cover Christian McCaffrey, that is an unfair matchup.
Right, well, there's another good play of, you know, they get in a formation. They get the look they think they want. They motion McCaffrey out of the backfield where he just goes sideways even though they're in the shotgun. He doesn't go to the line of scrimmage at all. He shuffles, but it's really just to clear out the picture a little bit for Purdy and the offense altogether. So now he goes, wait, he's kind of shuffling sideways. Look, the linebacker's shuffling with him, right? And now we've opened the field a little bit to make this read and even the space in which McCaffrey can cut. Is he going to go inside? Is he going to go outside? Is he going to go straight? There's more space. And now the linebacker's like, oh, well, shit, I got no chance here. And, of course, that's how they make big plays, and that's where, you know, the 49ers are next level and amazing that way.
So the linebackers for the Eagles stuck out to you a little bit, being put in those difficult situations, not always succeeding. The cornerback stuck out for some people out there, including Eagles Hall of Famer Seth Joyner. Did you see this?
Oh, I did see a little of this. Let me hear
so
this.
So he said after the game, he's a local analyst now for the Eagles.
Right.
He said after the game, our cornerbacks are as disinterested at tackling as someone as a young kid coming out to play football for the first time. So he threw that out there. He was ripping on the aggressiveness and toughness of some of those corners, and the corners didn't like that, including Darius Slay.
Yeah, well,
he clapped back on Twitter, and Eagles fans saw this and said it was talking out of the side of your neck is what Darius Slay tweeted out there to this legend, this Hall of Famer, and Seth Joyner. The funny thing is, and Pete noted this to me before we started talking about it, Eagles fans in the mentions were like, no, Darius, you guys were not good. You guys did not tackle that well.
No.
To the point where Darius Slay had to come out and be like, hey, everyone, just chill out a bit here. I realize that. We didn't play that well. But what did you see from the – was it that they were not disinterested in tackling at all?
I don't think that. I didn't look at it and go, oh, they were not interested. Or they, you know, again, it's a rare dude wearing number 19 in white and red. It's a rare dude. He makes a lot of DBs look like they don't want to tackle or they're not aggressive all the time. I did not watch the film and go, there was reluctance for them to make this tackle or do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they were well thought out plays where a lot of the times the corners had nothing to do. Darius Slay, like when he's chasing down Debo Samuel on the 48 touchdown pass down the middle, it's not because of lack of aggressiveness. I mean, damn, he hustles, he runs him down. Debo carries him for like 4 yards. I mean, again, it wasn't because he was like, oh, no, I want to lightly jump on your back so you can keep running. He tried. He tried to swipe hard to hit the ball. I mean, Debo is a load. If people saw Debo Samuel, if some of the Eagles fans who were on Darius saw Debo, I'd go, like, I'll give you $1 million, Mr. Eagles fan. Tackle Debo right now. Let's see how that goes for you. All right? So that's where, let alone he was in space. He's quick as hell. He accelerates as hell. And a lot of the times, too, he had blockers in front of him where the DBs are trying to take on a block and tackle him at the same time. So I don't look at it like that at all. I just look at it as, yeah, they were in some tough spots, and the 49ers were motivated, and they had to tackle a guy that we know is, like, you know, a handful when it comes to that.
And there were some players that stood out to you on that Eagles defense. What did you like about Nolan Smith? A couple of the young guys here, their edge Nolan Smith and their safety Sidney Brown.
They to me need to be infused into the lineup a little bit more. You know, they throw them a bone here and there just to go, hey, young guys, get in there, you're good. But, you know, I don't know if they don't trust them or yet or whatever. But to me, those are guys, when I see them on the field, they pop out for the Philadelphia Eagles, you know. I'm sure they're not as smart as some of the older guys or whatever else, but they add an element of an explosiveness to their defense that, you know, brings them up another level. And, you know, all the talk about their safety play anyways, you know, Brown can fly and flies around like a kamikaze, just like his brother did as a Cincinnati Bengals running back the other night, as you saw, right? So I think they need to find a way. And Nolan Smith is just he's just a freak of nature. You know, the way he can take on blocks, rush the passer, whatever. You know, he'd be the guy, if I had to play the 49ers again, I'd have him on the field more. When we talk about 21 personnel, are they going to get big or are they going to get fast? When you got a guy like Hassan Reddick and Nolan Smith on the field, that'll combat some of that 21 personnel stuff we talked about. But really, when it all said and done, once the 49ers got in a little rhythm there on that first touchdown drive, Shanahan figured out how they were playing them. And slowly but surely got to plays and got the Eagles in situations and in coverages that he kind of had a feel, wait, they're going to do this right here. Yeah. And then, of course, they packaged together the right plays with that. And they couldn't be stopped. The Eagles, there was nothing they could do. You know, the Eagles' D-line could not overpower the 49ers on that side. You know, and the Eagles, you know, playing their zone coverages for the most part, yeah, it was just too comfortable for Purdy and Shanahan. And that's where we've talked about in the past. The Eagles need to find a way to just trick it up a little bit, a little more illusion. I'm not saying they got to reinvent the wheel, but like I said, there's too many times, and I, you know, I talk to people sometimes, they go, well, the Eagles, they run every coverage in, under the book. And I go, I know, but they line up in it. You know what it is, right? Like you talk, like we talk about every week, I like the defenses who don't let the quarterback know what they're getting until they say set hut, and then they look up and they go, oh, crap, it's that coverage. It didn't look like that before the snap. And to me, they make the opposing team quarterback a little too comfortable at times.
I mean, we've talked about the similarities between Kyle Shanahan, what he does, and Mike McDaniel, what he does. Mike McDaniel got a lot of the stuff that he does because he was with Kyle Shanahan for so long.
Right.
They did a pretty good job against the Dolphins. They just gave up 17 points in that Week 7 win. So why did they have more difficulty with the 49ers?
Because of the traditional run game, right? They could beat the crap out of the Dolphins up front. So they didn't worry so much about the run game. They were like, we're okay there. We don't have to put 5 D linemen in against the Dolphins. We're good. The 49ers, they went, ooh, we could get out physical. They could gash us in the run game. We got to worry about that. So we got to take a guy out of coverage or be a little more aggressive with our fronts there. And that's the big difference as far as the output of the difference of the offenses. Shanahan's offense and McDaniel, you're totally right, are very similar. It's just McDaniel's is a little bit more through the pass game and the speed of his football team. Shanahan, of course, is speed and has a pass game, but it's still premised on the physicality and the Shanahan run genius, and then he does the other stuff off of that. You know, McDaniel's doing it off of pass genius, pass genius, pass genius. Oh, you're taking away the pass. Here's a toss crack or something out, and we're going to get Raheem Mostert out on the edge and do that. So it's a little different way in how the approach is.
Got it. Before we turn the page to the other side of the ball, we do have to talk about Brock Purdy because he shot up the MVP
he should
odds for a lot of people out there and a lot of the sports books out there. And when you look at his numbers, you know, people say, oh, it's a dink and dunk, and there were so many yards after the catch in this game specifically for him because Debo Samuel was so tough to take down.
Right.
Passes of 20 yards or more downfield this season, he has an NFL-high 63% completion percentage. So when they do throw deep, because of scheme and because of him and because of the wide receivers, they do hit it. But his longest attempt versus the Eagles in this game was just 16 yards downfield. When you look at Brock Purdy and his game on film, what'd you see?
Well, I think that was one by design. They did not want, you know, they learned their lesson in the NFC Championship game. Try to throw the ball deep down the field. Brock Purdy gets crushed and hit by Hassan Reddick and might not be playing, right? So they weren't going to, you know, tempt fate too many times with that, right? So I think that's the first thing. But Purdy was magnificent. I mean, he really was. And even though none of the throws were, you know, down the field or highlight reel-ish type throws, some of the throws regardless were big-time throws. You know, whether, like I told you, some of the out routes early to Ayuk to kind of get them going. Yeah. There was a 21-13, third and seven. He throws like a 12-yard out route. It's like, ooh, kind of feels like the Eagles might have got momentum here. If the 49ers don't convert this, they're going to punt it back to the Eagles.
Yeah.
The Eagles just drove down the field and scored. You know, uh-oh, are we getting into this Eagles come back in the second half type of thing here? And he throws an out route, right? Big pressure moment, elements not great, on the money. First down allows them to keep the momentum
going. You called that his play of the day.
I think it was the play of the day. I think that was the play of the day as far as the Eagles were – kind of doubting themselves. They went, oh, wait, we do belong. We're back in this. Here we go. The fans were going crazy and everything. And that was kind of like, whoop, nope, nope. We're going to continue marching down the field on you. Get ready for that. You know, this assault is not done. And I do think that was the play of the day as far as the 49ers were concerned to keep their momentum, squash the Eagles' momentum, and of course, just stomp on the Eagles' throat there as the game went on.
All right, let's flip it over to the other side of the ball here because it was the Eagles that were dominating early on. You mentioned it on Sunday night. You mentioned it earlier here, but they were just getting field goals instead of touchdowns. And then it fizzled out a little bit. The 49ers made it very difficult on them. With your deeper dive, what did you see that maybe you didn't expect to see or that tells the story of why the Eagles had it harder against this 49ers defense?
Well, I think early on they moved the ball, third down conversions. The big thing and the shock to me is two things, especially early on. The 49ers played a lot of man early on. They usually don't. You hear me talk about it all the time. The 49ers don't like to play man. That's not what they are. They're not real good at it, right? They don't have those type of corners. That's not what they do. But they came out in this one and played a significant amount the first two, three drives of the football game where I was kind of like, whoa, you know. And I was sitting there going, like, why? I don't understand it. Like, why would you do this? But, you know, I think hearing some of their post-game comments and then – thinking about the game big picture-wise, I think it was two things. One, you know, they weren't going to let the Eagles' run game start getting off on them early in the game. You know, Eagles start running the ball, and then you're so worried about the run. A little bit like we talk about the 49ers. Now play action pass, Hurts run game works, all of it. And you're like, oh, no, our heads are spinning. So they wanted to squash that. I think the other part of that is they wanted to squash Hurts scrambling. They didn't want him to get in a rhythm and start making the game this scramble fest to where he feels like he's going to run all game. So I think they put an added emphasis on early in the game, they're not going to run. Hurts isn't going to run around on us. If he hits us and beats some passes man-to-man, then so be it. But I think they were willing to live with that rather than, you know, oh my gosh, there goes Swift 20 yards up the middle. There goes Swift 20 yards off the right. Oh, Hurts, you know, scrambled and got 15 yards. That is when the Eagles become a real pain in the ass, and I think that was the reason we saw that early on.
We've talked much about, you know, what Jalen Hurts can do, what he cannot do, some of his limitations, some of the things that he's gotten better at in reading defenses and making the right play.
Right.
From watching the film on this, what are still, like, the main areas of improvement for Jalen Hurts moving forward?
We've hit on this. He's playing real good football. We know that, right? Am I shocked that he's still in the MVP conversation? 100%. I don't understand that. I'm just going to say that, okay? I mean, it's one of the league leaders in turnovers, right? One of the league leaders in sacks with the most time to throw in all of football, right? Right? And you've heard me say the last few weeks, there's some bad habits being performed here, right? I'll even look, the play he got hurt on, there was people open. I don't know why he ran, right? He just sees a lane and he runs. And I go, step up in the pocket. You know, I think it was Zacchaeus on the right side is up the seam. He's wide open for a 20-yard completion, right? He's tempting the fate of the football gods a little too much. You know, I know we look at it and go, oh, he ran for five, but there's a lot of plays lately where I've gone, yeah, but there's a completion open for 20. That was a great run for five, but if he just stayed in the pocket, he's going to throw a completion for 20 yards. So I feel like there's a little bit too much backyard football creeping into his game right now. That would be my one complaint. And I think he left a few plays on the field, you know, because of that the other night. You know,
we've seen him in the past be able to, you know, make the right reads.
He makes the right reads a lot of the times. I think he's just like maybe putting a little too much pressure on himself to make plays, get things going. Their offense hasn't quite been the machine that we've known it to be, especially compared to last year, right? I think there's a little bit of that, you know. But yeah, it was a weird one, too, because as you saw from my notes, I've never seen anybody block the 49ers front like that in my life. I mean, you know, some of the sacks he took, he had plus 7 seconds to throw the football, right? And they were in bad moments. You know, the 6-0, right? On second down, he lost 15 yards. It was, I want to say, like second and 7. That took a bad their chance to go make it third and short and run it on third and short. And then tush-push, we get the first down. Maybe we score a touchdown. Right. You know, so there's just a handful of plays like that where it's still really good. But I've said it against Kansas City. I said it against Buffalo. And I'd be not fair to my evaluations to tell you again that, yes, there's a little bit of that creeping into his game right now that he's got to clean up, let alone two. They are too pass happy. They are too pass happy. Right. What did I write at one point? They were up 6-0 and they threw the ball 11 plays, 10 out of 11 plays out of that. The next, like, where's the run game? You know, so I didn't understand that. But after those first two drives and them moving the ball down, the 49ers got out of that man to man and kind of got back to what they normally do, which is their Seattle threes, their cover fours, and their other creative little zones that they like to run behind that great front four.
There's a couple things here, too. And the 49ers had to blitz a little bit, third down blitzes later in the game, I think, too. And the Eagles actually were quite successful on converting some of those third downs.
When they played man or blitzed, the Eagles won. And that's what happened on the first few drives. I mean, early on in the game, I think they were like, you know, 5-for-5 or 6-for-6 on third downs, right? It was because of what you were talking about. It was blitz. It was man-to-man. And he was like, wait, it's A.J. Brown on this guy? Boom, I'm going to hit him. What, it's Devontae Smith on that guy? Boom, I'm going to hit him. He's better than your guy. And those were great. Those were the right plays all the way.
But they might have felt like they had to do that as the game went on, because I think that was one of the more surprising things, is you said that Lane Johnson just shut down Nick Bosa.
I've never seen anybody do that to their D-line, and I've never seen anybody do what Lane Johnson did to Nick Bosa, right? And there's a bunch of plays, too, where Nick Bosa comes in speed to power, and he kind of moves Lane Johnson. And you're like, oh, whoa, he's going to push him back into Jalen Hurts. And Lane Johnson just goes and stops him, like, in his tracks. You're like, what? What kind of human are you? Because I've seen Nick Bosa in person, and I don't think there's a human on earth that can stop him when he wants to run as hard as he can. And that was the incredible aspect of the football game. But, you know, the 49ers with their coverages, you know, and how well they are, and the way the Eagles attack, which I tell you again, you know, is not as creative as it was last year when they had Shane Steichen. You know, they don't have as many answers in the pass game as they used to, and I think that's one of the problems of the year, their offensive efficiency as well.
49ers now going to take on the Seattle Seahawks. 49ers won 31-13 just a couple weeks ago. It's not like the Seahawks are playing that much better since then, although they had a shootout with the Dallas Cowboys last time we saw them. What are your thoughts going into that one?
Well, I think the 49ers are rolling, and I think the Seahawks are reeling. So one team's rolling, the other one's reeling, and I think it's a bad matchup with the Seahawks. I don't see a lot of avenues in which they can pull an upset other than, like, Purdy throws a dumb interception or two, McCaffrey fumbles, you know, maybe they get a strip sack, right? It's going to take something like that. If the game's played on relatively even terms, the 49ers going to win that football game. They're too good. And between the struggles of the Seahawks on the red zone or third down, you know, those aren't good things with the 49ers because they thrive in that type of stuff.
And then for the Eagles, maybe our biggest game on Sunday night this year.
Yeah.
You got the 10-2 Eagles facing the 9-3 Dallas Cowboys. You mentioned the Seahawks are reeling. Maybe the Cowboys, maybe this is their time.
This is their time. It's to, if they want to get it, it's now, right? Eagles are not playing their best football. You know, you just talked about how they were exhausted going into this game. Now they're going to go into another game just like it, right? I mean, they've played three battles in a row. And now they're going to Dallas, who has had this marked on their calendar, and they like to play at home and all of that. The big thing is going to be this, as we always talk about with this matchup. Can Dallas's speed disrupt the size of the Eagles? They are always compromised when they play the Eagles and the 49ers because they get pushed around up front, and they have to relegate more people to stopping the run game or stopping the front, and it causes issues for them everywhere else. We'll see if they can stand up to it. We'll see. The offense is hitting on all cylinders in Dallas right now. The Eagles' defense, as you said, every week is kind of getting torn apart right now. Josh Allen tore them apart, right? Isaiah Pacheco tore them apart the week before that. The whole 49ers team tore them apart last week. So they got them reeling, certainly. Going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But, yeah, the Eagles are still really good. There's just some things. Hurts can play cleaner. They can be more patient with the run game. They need to trick it up on defense a little bit. I think they're a little too bland and simple at times, and I think that'll go a long way. We'll see where they go from here. But, it's interesting. And you know, yeah, that's it. I'm good.
That's it.
Yeah.
We've put a
I think
period.
So. I don't think
Closed
I missed anything else, did I?
No, that was it. That was I think that was most of it. If anything comes to mind, we can say it as we go on here.
All right, cool.
The Cowboys are 3.5 points favorites at home.
Wow, 3.5.
The Eagles.
That's significant.
That is a little surprising.
Yeah.
In our game of the year on Sunday Night Football on NBC. All right, you looked at other games. You did deep dives into some of these other games. We're going to look at these in the context of Coach of the Year because we wanted the homies to chime in, too. Who are their Coach of the Year candidates? Maybe give us a top three. And so the homies in droves have done that. So we're going to talk about a lot of these coaches,
cool.
What they've done well, what your thoughts of what they've done well.
Yep.
We'll start with Toast Leonard 5, who gave us his why'd you laugh?
Oh, I thought you said toast.
I don't
it's
know. What
toast.
Is it? Toast? Toast Leonard 5.
Tochi, maybe?
Tochi?
Yeah.
Tochi Leonard 5. I was like, oh, no, is this another mall cop that I don't know who is in a movie? I was like, this is someone I should know. I'm not going to swear. I'm not going to do that. I've done that for my time for the podcast. He has Kyle Shanahan number one for his Coach of the Year candidate. Brock Purdy is the favorite, quote-unquote, he put here for MVP. I'm not sure anything else more needs to be said. He goes number two, D'Amico Ryans. Many assumed he would be the worst team in the AFC, and they're sitting 7-5. And he goes, number three, Dan Campbell or Mike McDaniel. Figured they would be good, but still needed to prove it. So we'll hear from some of the other homies here who chime in. But we just talked about Kyle Shanahan and all the things they're doing offensively with the San Francisco 49ers. He's his number one candidate right now. And I would bet you, for a lot of people out there, as we look at the DraftKings sportsbooks, it often doesn't go to the guy like Kyle Shanahan. You see his odds here, plus 2,000, because much was expected of the San Francisco 49ers.
I get it. But when the much wasn't expected from the 49ers, Kyle didn't get any love there either. I don't know. He's one of those guys that for some reason, because he doesn't talk to the media, you know, off camera or anything like that.
His hats that he wears doesn't look like a coach.
Well, yeah,
or
he's not a political guy. He's not into all of that. I think that goes against him. Like a little bit what went against him and why he didn't get a head coaching job quite as quickly as he probably should have. His name was Shanahan. They think like his dad still calling plays, you know, from his home in Denver somewhere. Like, hey, Kyle can't really be doing that. Let me just say this right off the bat. The best head coach in football is Kyle Shanahan, and I don't really think it's close right now. Okay, that's what I'm going to tell you. Now, you can look at his coaching tree, which there's a number of them on this graphic. Okay, that speaks to it. The GMs he has around football, right? I mean, you go through it. I mean, last year, why didn't he win last year? Was everybody expecting them to go to the NFC Championship game with a Mr. Irrelevant, right? Why didn't he win it the year they went to the Super Bowl? They came out of nowhere and were the number one seed in the NFC playoffs with Jimmy Garoppolo. Why didn't he win it then? Jim Harbaugh won it with a team that he went to the playoffs with the year before. I mean, what? So that's where I don't understand the whole thing. I'm going Shanahan 1. I've changed my thought. Shanahan is in, also has his hand in the defensive side of the ball. As you've heard me say, this is the Shanahan defense. Steve Wilks comes in and learns how to run their defense. He doesn't come in and go, hey, I want to do this. Now they go, no, this is what we do. You learn how to do it and go from there, and you can tweak with it and play with it a little bit, but this is what we do here, the 49ers. I'm Kyle Shanahan. I run this organization, yeah. Right? So I am... It's a really unbelievable year.
Yeah,
it
let me read
right?
the odds one
sorry.
More time.
I ranted case... there, and I didn't really
no, that's
mean
good.
To do that. I'm
no, that's
sorry,
good.
But it was
whenever
my real
you
passion.
Choose to rant on this podcast, we will let that happen every time, 10 times out of 10 times. Dan Campbell is the favorite right now, according to DraftKings, at +200.
Well, we all thought they were. I thought the expectations. Everybody expected him
but
to do this.
But we never really think the Lions
see, this
are going to be as good.
Oh, now it's
we
that.
Never really
listen,
think.
He deserves to be here right up where at the top. I'm not against that.
This is like a like one of those career achievement awards, right? It's like what he's done and built over the last 3 years have culminated
I
into what the team is
sure.
right now. Because they're
sure.
not in this spot with Dan Campbell. And I know that's not the award, right?
Yeah.
It's about what you've
right.
done this year.
Right.
But I think maybe that is the story for Dan Campbell, is that what he's done over the past 3 years. Building a culture
you.
The second half of last year.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. He deserves to be every bit at the top of this conversation. In fact, all the guys that are at the top here deserve. I mean,
D'Amico
Ryan's
number two.
Right?
You got Mike McDaniel three. Shane Steichen from the Colts is four. And then you get into the longer shot odds with the guys like Sirianni, Shanahan, and Matt LaFleur.
It's an incredible year. I mean, Matt LaFleur is another guy I could argue goes, well, why didn't he ever get credit or get – why didn't he win the job?
It was all Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I thought they were ready to get rid of him, and all of a sudden they go 13-3 and wins the MVP, and they're like, oh, it's not LaFleur, it's Aaron Rodgers. And then they do it again, and it's like, eh, it's not LaFleur, it's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, so I don't understand it. O'Connell and what he's done with the quarterback situation's insane. Sean Payton's insane, right? You know, I mean – all those guys, I think, except the two in the middle, Sirianni and Shanahan, have exceeded expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say with the way the 49ers are playing and looking clearly like the best team in football, you know, and Sirianni and the Eagles kind of going through a tough spatch, that's where I would definitely have Shanahan ahead of him right now, all right? But I'm going to be on the unpopular one and say Shanahan should be one because I'm just sick of kind of the BS around this conversation too.
You want to give it to the guy you think is the best coach
if
right
we're
now
not going to give him to in the other years where he exceeded expectations, how about we give it to him in the year where he's actually the actual best coach in football, right? That's all I'll say. Now, my number two will be Mike McDaniel. That would be my number two. You know, and I know the Dolphins had expectations, but come on. I mean, one, they're the number one seed in the AFC right now. Two, they've revolutionizing the offense, like we talked about a few weeks ago. I mean, they're number one in like every offensive category in football. I mean, they're incredible. So that is who I would make two, let alone, hey, like you talked about with Dan Campbell, he resurrected Tua and like a little bit of what he did last year should go into this year. All right. Then, you know, that's where I get into then now the D'Amico Ryan, Dan Campbell, Shane Steichen conversation where I want to go, wow, it's really close right there. All right. So that's where I think if I had to pick the third one, it would be D'Amico Ryan's.
Mm.
Right. That would be my third. If you really were like, but damn, I don't say that lightly out of disrespect for Dan Campbell and all the things you said are totally correct. Or what Shane Steichen is doing, where one, they look better with a rookie quarterback than we expected. And then we're like, oh, the rookie quarterback's hurt. That stinks. They're not going to be as good. And you go, oh, whoa, they're in the playoffs right now with Gardner Minshew. So incredible coach. It's a really, really tough year. As tough as I can ever remember with – you know, the quality of coaches we got right now in the NFL.
It's going to be fascinating. We're going to talk more about this. But I want to let you know that you should not forget that on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly.
Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day.
You can download the app, use the promo code UNBUTTON when you sign up. DraftKings
Sportsbook,
the
crown
is
yours.
So whenever we talk betting, we got to bring
somebody
up
won millions today because of
what?
You. They bet millions that you would swear, and they won today.
What were the odds on that? Oh,
well,
my
gosh. It was one in a million.
They would.
They bet $1, and
every
now
day.
DraftKings has to pay them $1 million.
Every day, a homie's just put $1 on it.
Because he slipped up.
It's going to happen one day. He's going to slip up. So every day I'm going to put $1 on it, and they've lost a lot of money up to this point. How many podcasts have we done here, Pete? This is five. They lost $561 every day just betting on it. And now finally they get the $1 million.
They got
congratulations
it.
To you. But whenever we talk betting, we got to bring up our friend, NBC betting analyst Jay Croucher, because he's kind of like
the betting whisperer on stuff like this. Like, yeah, he often sees before everyone else.
He's amazing.
Who will be trending and who will be talking about by the end of the year.
Right.
And so he has listed for Pete here his top five coach of the year candidates in terms of likeliest to win. Now, these are not the guys that he thinks should win or whatever. He thinks these are
this
likeliest
gonna
to win.
Right.
I'm shocked a little bit by his number one. His number one, Shane Steichen for the Indianapolis Colts.
I think a little bit of, you know, how it ended last year, Frank Reich, right? Like, how good can they possibly be? Their offensive line looked like it was on a decline last year. You know, the quarterback situation, like we talked about. Secondary doesn't have any marquee players. I mean, I totally understand him being every bit at the top of this list, like I talked about. This is where it's tough.
DeMeco Ryans, he has as number two, Dan Campbell three, Mike McDaniel four, and then Matt LaFleur.
Wow.
Because if they get hot and make a run here without Aaron Rodgers, finally he gets the credit that he deserves.
Yeah.
Jay also notes that the Texans play the Colts in Week 18, perhaps the first ever Coach of the Year Bowl.
That's
like
amazing.
The winner of that game, who knows, goes to the playoffs and gets Coach of the Year. That could be true.
Now, I mean, if they win and one goes in and they get in at 9-8, like that's not Coach of the Year material, right? And that could very easily happen with these two teams here. So we'll see how this plays out these last 5 weeks.
Jay is always giving his betting analyst. He goes in depth on these awards just about every day with Drew Dinsick on Bet the Edge. You can get that wherever you download your podcast. And look at that. They're two nice-looking gentlemen.
They're awesome, dudes. They're all over the sport. They got lots of great football thoughts. And, of course, they're all over anything, betting lines, having a feel for the market, the public, what they're doing. Drew and Jay are awesome human beings, let alone awesome sports colleagues, information, bettors. I don't know. They're sharps. I was going to say, what is their classification? What
sharps,
do you call them?
I guess. Sharps. Are they whales?
Right.
Is that? Oh, yeah. Whale capper is Drew's Twitter
handle. It's sharps, though, right?
Sharp is the one that like can move an odd because of like, this
guy knows. I
always
thought it was a shark.
Ooh.
Are they both? I don't know. I mean, I'm Chris Sims and famous for Simsisms and mexing things up.
I've heard them both in the
gambling realm. You have heard them?
Gambling
I thought
realm.
It was one of those. Maybe
I've
just been calling it wrong the whole time, thinking people were calling it sharks, and then people are saying sharps, and I just thought.
And then sharks and whales, too, right? That applies, too. The whales are the big bettors, right?
Yeah, right. But maybe sharks aren't really involved.
And the fish are the ones that actually get their money taken in poker. I do know that. Wow, it's a lot
of... Wow, look at you. Doesn't know movies, but knows how to bet.
A lot of sea creatures. I know about the sea creatures and which ones pertain to gambling and which ones do not. So, yes, we've already gotten into a lot of the names here, but you tweeted out to the homies. I mentioned this already. Who are your top three Coach of the Year candidates right now and why? Can I give you mine?
Yeah, of course you can.
So number one is Dan Campbell,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, of course. Well, you've already made that clear.
It
Thank
has
you.
To be, right? It's a career achievement award here.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I do feel like if they were to give him a lifetime contract right now, I'd be like, that's fine.
What if it falls apart here at the end? That's going to be interesting. Like, what
that
if
would
it
not,
starts
no, that would
dicey.
Be sad. That would dicey. Not be interesting. Yeah, it would be dicey. But I did see someone in Detroit tweet this, because there are a lot of people in Detroit right now complaining with how the defense is looking and being like, it's falling apart, smoke and mirrors on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And that is true. It is troubling on the defensive side. But he was saying, and this is speaking reason into the conversation, he goes, you have a defense that is not very good. That is true. And you're 9-3 right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen to what you're saying, right? Yeah. You have 9 wins in a year where you're rooting for the Detroit Lions and they don't have a great defense. That is a win in a lot of people's books.
No, you're right. Well, it shows that they were able to overcome that. I mean, the defense was solid early in the year, but now it does seem like it's fallen apart. And good thing their offense is pretty elite in all areas to where they can put you in some tough spots.
Our former NBC colleague Caitlin Urca chimed in, said Dan Campbell.
I knew that. She's like you. She's a Wolverine and a Lions fan.
The Lions have had a remarkable turnaround, and he has the entire state fired up and believing. I haven't been this excited to be a Detroit Lion fan since Barry Sanders was in the backfield.
Wow.
That's true.
I think this is more exciting than that era. I really do. I mean, he was the most exciting thing ever, but I think this era, like, I can remember being 10 and 11 and being like, the Lions aren't going to the Super Bowl. I don't care. You know, like, you knew they weren't. You never felt like that. You know, this team has a little bit more, I feel like, of a overall chance than maybe those teams.
They're
did.
Still growing. They got cap
they
space.
Growing.
They got draft picks next year. I think they're
next
the year best
is really
is yet
the
to come.
Year. Exactly right.
I do
I
think
agree.
That actually is true. Yeah. You know, it's like yes. this year they're proving to themselves
yeah.
that they can
need
be a playoff
pass
team.
Pass rusher. Need another secondary guy, like we've discussed many times.
My number two is Shane Steichen, and there are a lot of the homies out there that wanted to give some love to Shane Steichen. You've already done it
yeah.
here. He's the stick man per Jay Croucher. What does that mean, Pete? I see the AKA the stick man. What would that mean? The stick man.
I don't know either.
Wouldn't it be the Steich man?
I don't. That maybe that's what he's trying to say. Maybe Sorry. Jay was trying to say Steich, and in his Australian accent, it sounded like stick. And we were just like, all right, cool. Like he did with me on the
like
draft
Cody
podcast.
Mark,
Cody Mark.
Mark.
And he, I was like,
you go. He's one of the under the radar guys. You're like, I didn't.
I haven't watched
scouted
him
Cody at all.
Cody Mark. I don't know who Cody Mark is.
You're just flipping through your notes.
I like, really. Yeah. Oh, that was so stressful. I was like, oh my gosh, I missed a quality offensive lineman in my breakdowns.
Bernardo Banos. His number one is Shane Steich. And he goes, he's 7-5 with Gardner Minshew. Let's go back into the notebook here a little bit because
okay.
you did take a look at the Colts offense
yes,
a little
did.
Bit more, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
a lot of people are saying Shane Steichen here, and you've complimented him for the last 5 weeks or probably even more than that now from what you've seen. You dug into the offense, though, more than you have in the past.
Yes.
What were some of the things that stuck out to you about what he's doing and what they're able to do on
well,
that
listen,
side
I'll
of the ball?
Make it clear. I know I said my top three or whatever, but I would have no problem with Shane Steichen, you know, one coach of the year. He is every bit worthy of that. You know, I think the world of him. I think it's one of the best offenses in football, right? I think that's how I look at it. And again, I don't know, and I know I wrote this down in one spot of my notes. I don't know where their motions and their shifts and the things we talk about, right, and all that they do, but it's up there with the 49ers or the Dolphins as far as, you know, that movement and stressing a defense out. I don't know if it's right there with them or if it's a little behind. I don't look up the stats, but I know because I watch these guys a lot. They got a good O-line across the board, right? They got a creative scheme, run game and pass game, right? And to like what we showed earlier with Shanahan and the 49ers, knows how to tie plays together. Hey, here's this. Hey, here's this. Oh, it's a fake this and there's that, right? He's great at doing that. He's got tight ends and wide receivers who are willing to block big time and get involved in the physical aspects of the
I
game.
I love that. I love a team that has that.
They got multiple tight ends, and then you got a guy like Alec Pierce and Michael Pittman who are tough SOBs for a wide receiver. And, of course, Michael Pittman is. I played with his dad. They don't get any tougher than the Pittmans, I can tell you that.
What about the tight ends, too? Because you did make note of them. You got, what, 83? That's Kylan Granson.
Yep, right.
And Grayson. Then you got Drew Ogletree, 85.
They got some juice. I mean, you look at them and go, they need to be involved in the pass game a little bit more in their offense, right? Pierce and Pittman are, you know, really good. Pierce is a guy that can take the top off of defense. He's got that type of speed. Pittman can do that, but also is awesome in the intermediate, tough catches over the middle, break a tackle, do all that type of stuff. But, yeah, these tight ends, you know, a little bit like we talked about with the 49ers, they could put some people in some binds where, hey, we're going to get big, we're going to run the ball, right? Oh, no, now they're split out of receiver. It's an issue for you guys. Not to mention Mo Alie-Cox is a part of the group, too, who's just a giant human being that can do both.
So there, I feel like in reading your notes, you think – in watching them and going through the film, that they have you've liked Pittman, you've liked Alec Pierce for a long time, but you think there might be even more offensive talent than you had previously thought on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the rookie Downs has come through in big time. The O-line played bad last year, you know, so I wondered, oh man, are they coming to the end of their shelf life a little bit? They're not. They're still going strong. And I think Steichen and his, you know, vast array of run plays helps them out, let alone I think he knows how to, you know, put the poker right, you know, on the butt there and go, hey, we got to get going. You got to play harder. You got to be more physical. All that, you know, they got a wide receiver screen game that also, like, if you overplay their runs, hey, whoa, we'll smash you all in there. We'll throw it out in the edge and get 5, 8, 10 yards on a wide receiver screen. But yeah, like, this is a league-wide problem a little bit.
It is.
And there's another point here later on that I want to bring this out into conversation too, but maybe now is the time. But either way, if I have one complaint about their offense, is they need to throw the ball down the field a little bit more. Now, Gardner Minshew doesn't have a big arm, and He misses a few plays down the field every game. I get that. But their offense is so damn good. The only thing I look at is just they got to back people off a little bit every now and then. And Pierce runs by everybody. Everybody. I mean, it's amazing to see a white guy run that fast, you know, for lack of a better way to say it. Yeah. It really is. And I think that sometimes DBs do the same thing. They're like, he's not that fast. He's not going to run by me. Oh, no. And they're running like, you know, trying to catch up. So that is an aspect of their offense that I think it can make them more explosive and help out their run game and their RPOs and things like that just to open up the field like we talk about so much.
I want to dig into this a little bit because, okay. You know, I don't know. It wasn't this game that you noted
no,
it, but
it's the,
what was it? The Was it Rams?
Well, it's the I think it was the Packers game a little bit, but okay. It was also hold on, let me get to it because I know I wrote it right here. Oh, it was the Texans and the Broncos where okay. You saw me right at the end where I said the league needs to be more old school again, right? The whole NFL needs to throw the ball deep more. I look at too many games every week and go the same thing, right? Every defense is calling the offense's bluff. Right, there's too many second and nines and third and sevens where I watch and go, the defense is they're calling you. They know you're gonna. It's third and seven. They know you want to throw it 8 or 9 yards. They got nobody deep. They're calling your bluff, and teams are letting them off the hook because they want to be efficient. And I came with this play and do that. And to me, you know, I say old school because, you know, when I grew up, there was an era. It wasn't completion percentage wasn't always the number one thing, right? You know, really good throwers, awesome throwers, Josh Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, you know, Jalen Hurts, whatever. When you're that good, the 20-yard in-cut shouldn't be any different than the 5-yard throw. The 25, the 30-yard throw shouldn't, oh, he's open 30 yards down the field. Who cares if it's 30 or who is 5, right? And, you know, we've gotten away from a little bit of that because we want managers in the offense. Or, oh, he diagnoses so quick to throw the 5-yard throw, whoop-de-fucking-do. Well, it's so much of that. And then you add in the running quarterbacks that, yeah, I look at it all the time and go, it's 3rd and 4. They're playing everybody on the defense 5 yards deep, and they're going to try to jam it in there for a 6-yard gain. And I want to go, fuck, you got this quarterback, you got this receiver, throw the ball fucking deep. They're literally going, you won't throw it down there, will you, you chickens? And I think it's a big reason in why points are down, right, is a little bit of that, the lack of top-tier throwers. We've got into game managers a little bit. The prototypical Tom Brady, Peyton Manning type guy is not as much in the NFL anymore. You know, Warren Moon back in the day, right? You know, and I think that's a little bit why we're seeing defenses down. The Houston Texans, and we'll get to that game, and, of course, we're talking about the Colts and Titans right now, but the Texans, like the 49ers do, because Shanahan, he knows, I tear people apart, like we showed in the graphic with Purdy. He threw for 300 yards. He didn't throw one ball past 15 yards, right? So those defenses are going, Shanahan made the defense go, wait, I kill everybody here. Don't let everybody kill us like I kill everybody else, right? Remember in the Netflix thing with Mahomes? I mean, the Netflix thing with Mahomes playing the 49ers. They were trying to play all the Kelce stuff over the middle. And he goes, damn, they're not even playing the deep part of the field. He goes, that's disrespectful. They think they can get away with that shit against me? Or he said something like that. And they started to throw the ball down the field, right? So that, to me, is an overarching thing in football right now, where the coordinators are too worried about completion percentage and quarterback reading, and I want to manage the situation and efficiency and all that. And the defenses know that, and they're going, hey, we're going to be right here where you're going to try to throw these 5 and 6 yard throws, and it's making life hard.
Yeah,
so
I
thank you for letting me wax poetically about that for a minute.
I like that, and I always think of that, too, in situations where it's 3rd and long or like 3rd and 15 or 3rd and 19, you've had a sack or a holding or something like that. Most times you see the coach is just going to do a little screen over the middle
and hope
draw,
we can break a tackle,
like,
and
get a few
it,
yards,
maybe,
make
right.
a punt. I'm just like, why don't we just throw deep on that all the time?
Well, and then you see Mahomes and Allen, and they do, and those type of guys.
Could get a pass interference.
Right.
Your guy could come down with it.
Yeah.
And if they do pick it off, it's probably just like a punt a lot of times.
I got to this a little, and of course I see it on film and all that. And, you know, I of course grew up in an era of that. You know, I was telling the guys at the viewing room the other night, like on a Wednesday night, there's no football on. So I might get in bed at, you know, 10:30. And for a few minutes, I go, let me turn something on. So I turn on old football games, right? Mainly my dad's, right? And last week I turned on a 1988 game between him and Doug Williams, the Washington Redskins at the time, right? And they're playing a game. And you want to talk about quarterback efficiency? There was none. I mean, none. My dad was like 14 for 27 for 280 yards. 14 completions for 200, like in the third, it was late third quarter. Doug Williams was like 10 for 33 for 340 yards, right? I mean, so, but there was pressure on the offense, and you know, it just, there's to me too many, they're letting the defenses be too over-aggressive and take things away. I don't know, it doesn't have to be 10 for 33 like I'm talking about.
Right.
But there's something in the middle there that needs to be met with NFL offenses.
Well, right, and you've made the point before, and it just makes it so much more difficult for the quarterbacks when you're working in this phone booth.
Exactly right. They think they're doing favors to the quarterback, and you're really making it harder.
We've already talked about the Texans and D'Amico Ryans, and there were a lot of homies that want to give him love and had him number one for their coach of the year right now. Finn Sport F says D'Amico Ryans, the Texans weren't considered a playoff team by many, if any, before the seasons. Gregorianism says number one, D'Amico Ryans. Seeing what he's done with that team and how C.J. Stroud has come along so fast is a testament to the culture he put in place. So he's got his fingerprints all over the defense, obviously, for them. And you say it's a little bit different defense than what he ran in San Francisco, just because the personnel is a little different, can play a little bit more man.
The corners, that's it.
The corners are
exactly
different.
The corners allow them to play a little more man, and they allow them to blitz just a little bit more than he used to with the 49ers because he trusts them on the outside.
So the corner is better. It gives them a chance to do more stuff.
Yep.
You deep dove into their game against the Broncos, and specifically the Broncos on offense, Texans on defense. And while the corners are special, you noted in your notes, the front seven for the Houston Texans, not only good, you think they're among the top defenses in the league.
I do think that when you talk about team speed, they're up there with anybody, right? When I turn on Texans film every week, or not every week, but we've had to watch them a lot of weeks for our Wednesday What the F Happened podcast, and I'm always like, man, look at these dudes fly around the field. I mean, they can go. Now, they don't have a ton of size, and that's probably something they could address a little bit, right? You want to find that fine line of speed and size, like the 49ers have, again, you know, where it's like the D-line, they got the big dudes in the middle, and then they got the fast guys at all the other spots, right, that really help it out. But I think that's the thing that jumps out right away. The front seven speed is up there with any top defense in football. Like you just said, the cornerbacks allow them to do a little bit more than I think D'Amico Ryans ever did with the 49ers, because he goes, man, Stingley can... he can cover some people, right?
That second interception was special.
It really was, right? Was that not incredible as far as just going up to make that type of play? I mean, that was receiver-esque, like, type of ball skills.
You could probably take some screenshots, and it looks like he's beat by a step.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't even really his responsibility all the way. Mm. It was him playing football and being smart. They ran a double move on the safety. It was cover four. So for him not to make the play, nobody was going to be on the film the next day and be like, how come you didn't get over there to make the play? It wasn't really – it's just like he had nobody in his area. He saw the play developing a little bit, and he was like, whoa, I better go help out. And he makes the play. But, yeah, between him and Steven Nelson at the other corner, who's damn good, okay? Then they got two safeties who are really good against the pass, and Petrie and Ward, and also to add to that, not only are they good against the pass and have speed, nobody told them that they're small and they shouldn't be able to hit like they do, right? It's like, hey, guys, nobody told you, hey, you're 5'10", 185, you shouldn't be hitting like that. They don't know. They think they're 6'2", 255, right? So they bring it, and that brings something to their offense too. So I think those are the things. They're, of course, you know, the personnel meets the scheme, and they're one of the best zone teams in football, like the 49ers, have a master class in how to pass people off and zone certain sides of the field off and understand route combinations and all that. That really make them special, and that's what I like about that Texans defense.
And in watching this tape, briefly touch on what you saw from the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson. It seems like you were underwhelmed with... Even though we've talked about an improvement for Russell Wilson from what we saw last year.
Definitely.
You were still underwhelmed by this tape.
Yes, it was. Well, this was the game where, you know, they figured it out at the end of the game. And I wrote this in my notes, right? You're playing the Texans, you got to throw the ball and be patient for 4 and 5 yard gains, or you got to throw the ball 50 yards down the field. Like we said with Shanahan and what he did with this defense, he doesn't want people throwing the Deebo over the middle for 10, Deebo over the middle for 15, Deebo over the middle for 10, George Kittle over the middle for 10, right? So that's where it kind of lies. It's like, hey, here's a little throw in the slot. Oh, it's 2nd and 5. Hey, maybe another few though, but you got to take some shots down the field to back them up. You can't let Petrie be one-on-one versus Cortland Sutton and let them get away with it. You know, John Gruden used to say that we owe it to them and the rest of the league to not let them do this and show them that they can't put a safety on our best receiver, right? He used to say stuff like that. I'm like, you're exactly fucking right. They're cheating us here, and we're wrong if we don't take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. So that's what teams got to do a little bit. But Russell, one of his worst games we've seen, definitely his worst game we've seen here recently, right? Missed throws, watching the rush too much, right? Of course, the turnovers, they were all issues. You know, he had one pass drop downfield, but he missed some throws down the field that he should have had, and some ones also that were open that he didn't see because he was watching the rush. He got a little into some bad habits in this football game. There's no question about that. And that was a little disappointing, you know, because they certainly had their chance to win this football game.
The number five coach of the year candidate for our guy, Jay Croucher, was the Green Bay Packers coach. We've already talked about him, Matt LaFleur. But you looked a little bit. We had to, right? I mean, we had to look at this game. If you do your notebook session and don't look at the Packers offense and how they have changed and what they have done here,
exactly.
We're not doing our job.
Right.
We're not living up to the standard that we have set here on the Chris Sims and Button podcast.
Right.
And so you called this team, in quote, a wide-open, smash-mouth football team.
Yeah.
For the Green Bay, the Green Bay Packers. Yeah. I do like that. So we're going to go inside the numbers with this, powered by AWS, as we take a closer look at Matt LaFleur, what he has done, and what this offense is turning into. These are next-gen stats, Jordan Love's passing chart. According to next-gen stats, he generated a career-high plus 14.7 EPA, that's expected points added, on his dropbacks in the Packers' victory over the Chiefs. Love threw for over 100 yards off of play action for the third straight game, leads all quarterbacks with 378 yards off of play action since week number 11. So there's a lot of things going on there.
Right.
He is playing above average quarterback now, at least he did in the last game over the Chiefs. And so a wide-open, smash-mouth football team. A transformation of this Packers offense is what you've seen.
A transformation. I mean, you know, I should read my quote right at the end. Should I read it now? You know?
Can we see it, P, here?
Oh, okay. It's on there. Yeah, all right, good.
Let's do it. We'll go inside the notebook, brought to you by no one yet. We're still working on
that. But, I mean, if you see here in the bottom one, I wrote, the Packers do everything. I mean, even on plays the Chiefs D won or wins, you were like, good thing that guy got pressure, or that could have been a big play for the Packers, right? They have so many schemes and motions and everything they throw at you. And I just wrote, the Packers O went from training wheels to crotch rocket. We're doing wheelies, down the highway in a month span, right? It was literally like they were pedaling and it was like, ding, ding. We had like a little, you know, the little bell on the handle, ding, ding. We're going 3 miles per hour. And now they're like, and they're flying down the highway 150 miles per hour on the back wheel. I mean, it's incredible what their offense over a month. You know, I think the Chargers game was the jump off point. It had started a little before then. I think that gave him the confidence to go, okay, let's start unveiling it. He had a little success. He played good in that game. We think he's ready. And of course, that continued to Thanksgiving and then, of course, the last night. But every time I watch the Packers, I feel like they do more and more. More concepts, formations, way more movement and motions compared to earlier in the season, right? I'm sure their numbers are not the same as the 49ers, the Colts, or the Dolphins in totality. I would bet you they are the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, they have plays where there's motion twice on the same play, three times. It's like, wait, the receiver goes from here to there. Then they motion the tight end from there to over there. And then the receiver who moved from there, he goes back to the other spot really fast. They say set hut. You know, they're amazing at doing that. They really are. The offense is a lot like Shanahan and McDaniel. Not as creative as Shanahan with all the movement. Not as wide open as the Dolphins and McDaniel. But based through the run game like Shanahan and you know, of course, I said McDaniel is more through the quick passes, right? One of my favorite offenses to watch in football over the last month. 49ers, Dolphins, Colts, Lions, Texans, Vikings. I think those will be my favorite offenses to watch. I mean, it's hard, you know, as I went through it, it was hard not to look at it and go, man, what would have Aaron Rodgers looked like in this offense? I had that thought many times it the last 2 weeks, going, man, you know, man, he just wanted to line up and run slants and do that.
He wouldn't have allowed it.
Whoa, he could have done all this. But it's a great blend of cool, get on the plays with what you just talked about, aggressive play action passes and smash mouth up the middle, right? So, I mean, they got the reverses and sweeps are part of their game plan every week right now. They got wide receiver screens they get out there. They'll throw the thing we saw the 49ers do with Deebo Samuel, a toss sweep, or it's like a lateral pass out in the edge. Let's get him out in the edge. And there's lead block. It's not like it's just like, hey, you're in space, now make something happen. They're getting out in the edge, whether it's the reverse, the little, toss sweep, or even the little wide flare by the running back, and there's blockers in front of them. So you're going, yeah, this is a space play, but there's two guys in front of them ready to knock your fucking head off, right? So it's not like it's like, oh, this is, two-hand touch football. They're bringing it that way. Let alone they stay patient with trying to run the ball up the middle. Their O-line's getting better at run blocking because they're an amazing pass blocking group, but better run blocking. With this game going on, they had the Chiefs, as I was amazed with the 49ers going, I've never seen an O-line do this to the 49ers D-line in pass protection. I, in this game, was equally as going, I've never seen the Chiefs defense have their head spinning quite to the same capacity they had in this game where they were like, wait, check this, oh, check that, oh, no, check back to this. Check. I mean, they were all over the place,
yeah.
And it caused some confusion, which you don't see a whole lot in that Chiefs defense.
So let me ask you there, then, because that's interesting. Was this a Packers problem that the Chiefs defense had in this game, or are there signs of regression?
I think it is a little bit of a Packers problem. The Packers are talented, mm-hmm. right? You've heard me say that is one of the reasons I picked them to win the NFC North before the year. So their talent poses some problems. I think Spags and this one little got into, I don't know what the fuck they're going to do, so I'm going to be a little more conservative. And I, to that, what I always like about Spags, when these offenses do everything, he says, fuck you, I'm going to blitz this guy here, and you think this is going to be cute, you're going to fake to this guy, and now you're going to sit back there for 4 seconds and people down the field. We're going to send a blitz that you didn't prepare for, and it's kind of crazy, but it's going to ruin everything you want to do. I felt like he missed that, and that tactical chance, blitz, that gamble that we talk about that I love, that you have to do some against some of these really good offenses. I felt like that was a little bit of the difference in this game. And two, hey, they got some injuries on the defensive side of the ball. They were just outplayed. They were outplayed. They were out physical. And as you saw in my notes, there wasn't one standout on the Chiefs defense the whole game except for 95. I mean, Chris Jones was literally the only guy the whole game where I went, oh, hey, there he is. Oh, man, that was a play. Who was that? Oh, that was Chris Jones. Oh, man, somebody got pressure on Love. Who was that? Oh, it was Chris Jones again. I mean, so it was an underwhelming performance schematically and from the players on the football field.
And that was Inside the Numbers powered by AWS. Packers got a Monday Night Football game. Who do they have in this one? They got
the G-Men.
They got the
Giants.
My
family's actually asking me to go to the game. They're like, my son is going, can we go to the game?
You went to a Monday night game last year.
I know. And I don't have to work Tuesday morning, so it makes it tempting. There is another game on during that game this week.
Oh, that's
two Monday nights.
There's the two games.
Which is a little so.
And your reluctance is that, do you really want to see the Giants get beat again 2 years in a row in person?
I mean, we come out fighting. We're the G-men. We're not laying down for anything, all right? They're coming here. They better be ready. They better not be looking ahead in the schedule. That's what I'll say to that. But, back to the Packers, just a few more things real quick. They have patience with the run game. We talked about that. Love throwing it great, right? And he is really good in the pocket. He's aggressive with his decisions, and he knows where his outlets are. And he's fearless in the pocket. That's what I love about him. He doesn't blink when people are around him. In fact, at times where you're like, damn, you're a little too casual. They're about to strip sack you here. Can you hurry it up a little bit? And he don't care. So that's where they're kind of dangerous. He allows things to open up down the field. He ain't looking to be checked down Charlie, right? And I think that's his ability to throw off his back foot. He made a number of those again in this game where you just go, it's phenomenal stuff. It really is. But it's the reverses, the speed sweeps, the throwing the ball down the field, and the Packers do everything. And I really like watching them, and they're going to be something to watch here down the stretch. They really are, because of that talent we talked about on both sides of the football. Last thing I wanted to get to, because I was very critical on Gutekunst and how he handled the Rodgers situation, the GM for the Packers,
yeah.
Brian Gutekunst. I do got to give him credit, a lot of credit. You know, one, hey, I didn't love how he did the Rodgers thing. I understand that. And I understand it wasn't him and the organization all the way, too. I know Rodgers, and we know, can be a little handful. But, like, he deserves a lot of credit for the talent they have on their football team. I mean, they've drafted phenomenal. I mean, there was parts of the game the other night where you go, man, everybody in their front sevens in year one or two, and they're all damn good and only getting better. So, you know, it's incredible. They are stacked on both sides of the ball, and I just wanted to give, you know, Gutekunst a little credit for that.
For sure, for sure. He gets credit. Matt LaFleur, hopefully he gets a little bit more credit for the job that he's done, not
yes.
just this year, but the
right.
previous years. A name that I'm surprised that we haven't talked about yet in this Coach of the Year conversation is a coach of a team that's surging right now, surging towards the playoffs, perhaps. Sean McVay and the Rams. We got 98 Jun says, Sean McVay, insane how the Rams are still in the playoff contention for a team with a bunch of third-rounders.
It's insane, okay, and I didn't say this because I knew we were going to get to McVay. It's insane that he's not on the list for Coach of the Year.
He's plus, what'd you say, Pete? Plus 6,000 right now. 60 to 1. You put $1 on him, you get 60 bucks.
The Rams, like the Texans, and even more than the Colts, I would say, were teams that you went, there's no way they're going to the playoffs this year. His coaching has far exceeded the talent they have on their football team. I mean, that's the big thing I would say, right? Now, offensively, they got some talent, all right? You know, when you talk about Puka and Kupp and Higbee and Atwell and Kyren Williams, you go, that's a damn pretty good group right there. Their O-line is bigger and more physical than years past. Stafford isn't under assault or manslaughter every other play like he was early in his career or all of last year, early in the season, right? But and what I always do with them when I watch them, the phrase I use is creatively basic.
Which sounds like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, I don't mean it like that at all.
Yeah.
You know, McVay is, it's not like you go, oh, wow, that's so cool. I've never seen that or done that. But he just, again, knows how to package things together, right? That would be the one thing. Oh, you play this defense? I have this play called. Oh, you play that defense? I taught Stafford to check to another play, right? It might not be, oh, wow, but it goes, they're perfect plays to run against this defense. Yeah, well, and something positive is going to happen.
Which sometimes is even more genius, right, when you can keep it that simple.
For a day in free agency and player movement and kids coming out of college who'd never heard a play in their life, they just looked over at the sideline and saw a picture of a cow and they were like, oh, I gotta run the cow route or whatever. Yeah. Yes, it is. You're right to that. So there is some beauty to that. But they execute, they run the right plays into the right looks, and you always hear me say checks and balances. He's got a great way of, hey, you're overplaying this, we're gonna hit you with that. You're being a little too aggressive here, we're gonna hit you with that. Right? Like the Puka Nacua touchdown down the middle, 70-yarder, right? They were trying to play some, hey, we're going to scare you with a lot of people at the line of scrimmage. They were really trying to play Tampa too, but he was like, well, where you are, your safeties aren't going to be able to get back far enough. So now it's basically one-on-one with your middle linebacker, Taki Taki, and Puka Nacua. Advantage McVay and Puka Nacua. Touchdown. Boom. And that's where they're really cool. They're surgical. And when the defense gets sick of it and sick of the, oh man, Stafford's picking us apart, 5-8-10, 5-8-10, they throw a haymaker at you, right? That's where they're great. All of a sudden, oh, bam, no, now it's Puka Nacua, 70 yards, or, you know, it's Atwell down the sideline for a 50-yard gainer. They stay with the run, right? They're good at that. And then, you know, like I've said, I think the O-line and the D-line are bigger than they've ever been. Stafford playing awesome. No negative plays, no bad decisions, and in this game specifically, like we talk about when you play the Browns, right? Don't let the Browns D win the game, and there wasn't a bad decision or a dicey moment all game long. So they really saw the picture well, and then you add on Puka and Cooper Kupp. Can they block in the run game? They got some football players.
Yeah.
So that's the offensive side of the ball, and it's amazing what they're doing.
Yeah, you think they're bigger, more physical, both on the front in the offensive line and also on the defensive line.
I mean,
a team that's had Aaron Donald for a long time has
right.
been quite physical there, at least
yeah,
with him.
Yeah, they're physical. It's more speed and chaos.
Interesting.
So, right?
Okay.
So now they're, like, I worried about, you know, the Browns. You know, the Browns got a good running game, and I was like, man, the Browns, I don't know. Can the Rams, I know they're bigger up front, can they stop this? But that was, you know, another litmus test for me to sit here and go, no, they're real up front. You can't move them very easily. And they got some unique, you know, unique players that are hybrid type of guys that make them special. I mean, like you said, they got, of course, Aaron Donald in the middle still, so that's awesome. You know, the big kid, 95, Bobby Brown from Texas A&M. He's 330 pounds sitting in the middle, so that helps, right? And then they got Jonah Williams, who's like 290 plus, and then they got this, I don't even know if I'm saying it right, Hoyt, the Brown defensive lineman. He plays outside linebacker. He's 310 pounds, right? But he's got great hips and moves and can drop into coverage. So between him and then Byron Rung on the edge, it gives them a little versatility up front. Their talent on defense is not wowing. It's good, but they have a wowing scheme behind it. And that's why they're making it work on that side of the ball, and that's what's impressive. And that's why I think Raheem Morris is one of the best coordinators in football.
Pete tells us it is Hoyt. You got it right. Although you only need to say it once, he said. You don't need to say it twice for it. That is true. Adam Blackall chimes in often. One of our most vocal homies has Sean McVay as number three for him. He goes, is it wrong, though, to have the Shanahan coaching tree just in the top three? Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel, two, and then Sean McVay, three.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, you know, D'Amico Ryan is of course,
right?
So it is. You know, I think it speaks again, to those guys, the guys Shanahan brought to his staff. He brought people that are like him. Psychos in a good way, love ball, always trying to learn, always trying to progress their knowledge and do more, and then have the guts to try things where you go, I haven't seen anybody do this, nobody's ever taught me this, but I know football, and I'm going to try this out in a football game because I think it's going to work. And a lot of coaches are like that, and that's where I give these guys credit.
Let me throw a couple other names out here that the homies have thrown out there to be in the conversation for Coach of the Year. I like this one, too. Ted J. Rowland, his number one is John Harbaugh. Number one based on his philosophy of there being no poor plays, just poor execution and players following plays as intended. And Fion NC198 had Kyle Shanahan one. He goes, obviously. But number three for him was John Harbaugh. He said Baltimore a powerhouse and getting Lamar back on track after the contract drama.
Yeah, another guy that was he on that original list we read out? I don't think he was,
no.
Right?
Uh-uh.
You know, again, he is falling under, oh, he won it a few years ago, you know.
Supposed to be good.
He's supposed to be good. They won a Super Bowl, all that. But, man, made the tough decision, not only the Lamar drama, made the tough decision to get a new offensive coordinator, right? You know, got rid of Wink Martindale 2 years ago. And you went, oh, man, does this Mike McDonald really do what Wink does? Yes, he does every bit. So, hey, I think the world of John Harbaugh. I think he's one of the best coaches in football.
Dynasty Madden has number one Mike Tomlin. Who else is doing this much with this little?
Yeah, I hear that, too. I do. The only thing that I feel like hurts Mike Tomlin is the fact that he hired Matt Canada. So that hurts.
Right.
It
he's
hurts
doing it despite
cause.
Bad coaches
right.
Oh, wait, that he hired.
That he hired, but
is responsible for it.
Mike, you know, Mike Tomlin, again, I'm always amazed, like Pittsburgh fans, I want to go, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Like, you got one of the best ones in the game. Just be happy you got him.
HTT says Kevin O'Connell has to be top three. Lost the league-leading quarterback as well as league-leading wide receiver. Still in the playoff hunt. I feel like for some of these guys, it depends on what happens from here on out, right? Like, if the Vikings go on a run, but there are some signs like the Vikings might not be able to maintain the current trajectory.
I think it'll be dicey. We'll see where it goes. They got the Raiders this week, I believe, right? Have we heard who they're even going to play at quarterback? I think it's going to be Nick Mullins.
Mm.
We'll see.
All right, hinted so Josh Dobbs.
Pete's saying they hinted Josh Dobbs, but agreed with O'Connell, and hopefully, you know, HTT, you've listened to the podcast over the last 5 or 6 weeks where I've praised Kevin O'Connell and his offensive prowess and genius constantly. He's the man. I love their offense, and I love the way he attacks defenses and knows rules. It's almost like a little bit of a McVay. There's maybe a few more different ideas in the drop back pass game, but it's like at first look you go, it's kind of simple, and then you start to dive in and you go, oh, there's some intricate details here that make them special, and that's where O'Connell separates himself.
All right, we close the book on Coach of the Year candidates. We end with the song portion of our podcast.
Woo!
It is that
time. Like big butts, and we cannot lie.
The big butt of the week.
Oh.
Time to give some love to these big guys.
Some tushes.
There's a couple sacks, forced fumble.
He's a butting superstar.
Woo!
Give it to him, Ahmed.
One butt cheek.
And this is why you're the big butt expert of the world right now.
Woo! Our first guy is not a butting superstar. He's a butted superstar. He's been full butted. Rams defensive tackle Aaron Donald. What he did against the Cleveland Browns is the second big butt of the week award this season. Also had one week four against the Indianapolis Colts. Led all defensive tackles with 8 pressures. Had a sack, which was a safety at the end of the game. Played 65 snaps. You know I love that. And there's videos out there on Twitter of him just moving back Joel Bitonio,
moving him back or making him like whiff a few times,
and both.
Right. I mean, like, he had some moments in the game, right? Because I watched both sides, and we just got done diving in the Notebook there, where you don't see people do that to Joel Bitonio or Wyatt Teller very often, you know. And then, like, there was a few times where, Bitonio went on a few rides like this during the game. And then there was a few times where I think he was like, whoa, I better be ready here. I don't want to go for a ride again. And he tries to attack Aaron Donald a little bit, right? Instead of like, hey, usually O-line kind of sit there and they just absorb the blow and I'm big and I can lower my hips and I'll stand my ground. And so he a few times tried to kind of initiate the contact. And Aaron Donald's so amazing. He saw him coming at him, he like pulled him by him, and all of a sudden he's on Joe Flacco 3 steps later, right? And Flacco did a good job of getting the ball out of his hands most times than not. But Aaron Donald, he might not be what he was 3 years ago, but he's still damn good and still one of the best D tackles in football.
On the tail end of his career, our edge big butt of the week, just starting. He is a butting superstar.
He is.
Will Anderson for the Houston Texans, what he did against the Denver Broncos, his first career big butt of the week award. He did lead all edge with 8 pressures, 2 sacks, according to PFF, and had his first punt block in his career, too. He was all over the field for Houston.
Punt blocked, tipped the passer, Stingley got the first interception, right? You talk about the pressures. We talked about it Monday night. His instincts and physicality in the run game, they don't go on the stat sheet. They're second to none. It's up there with the TJ Watts and the Micah Parsons of the world as far as physicality and no regard for their body, right? That's what I like out of those guys. Like I said, there's plays where it's like, whoa, you know, Williams is running through the hole here full speed. You're not in the hole, but he just dives in front of it like he's, you know, like saving a kid in front of a car, right? And just like, I'll take the shot, but you'll go down. I know that. I mean, he's amazing that way. Will Anderson, the motor, the explosion, the instincts, they're all top-notch.
So there it is. Aaron Donald and Will Anderson. Perfect shots by Kristen here. Your elephant trophies are in the mail, along with the merch and the T-shirt that we made for you.
Right,
and
sure.
So we're
coming
getting it
any
made
day
as we speak.
Lately, you've had a lot of small butts on the Big Butt Award. A lot of small butts.
Right.
Smaller
hey,
butts.
Hey, you know what? The smaller butts
are performing.
It's a smaller
butt phase right now.
It's all about performance, you know? even if you have a small butt, you can still win the Big Butt of the week. It's a fast man's game, as Pete says here. All right, so that song is always gets me going right at the end of the podcast. But we end with, and if you've made it to this far in the podcast, we didn't even tease this. So if you've made it to this far in the podcast, tweet it, Chris, and say you made it to Requiem for a Team for
Requiem
the first time. And
for
if you
a
do
team.
That, Pete will like your tweet under Chris's account. So it is the Panthers. They're done. They're out of it. 1-11. They have been eliminated from playoff contention. We have our homies playoff predictions, you know, that we do in the early in the year. So sad to say 65 homies out there are wrong, because 65 of the over 1,000 homies did have the Carolina Panthers making the postseason. Oh, you want me just to go into it?
Well,
now?
I didn't. I did. You
dramatic pause.
You were right about that statement. 65 did.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll go to your home in North Carolina or wherever you live, or if you're Frank Reich is one of those guys. Who knows? But here we go. If you're new to the podcast, we lay these teams to rest. We try to do it as appropriately as possible, right? Respectfully.
Yeah.
So we do the music. Kristen plays the music, and then we get kind of a little somber.
Got to
respect
the dead.
So here we go. Here lie the Carolina Panthers. David Tepper kept it businesslike. With a tie, he stepped up to the mic. He confirmed what we knew, that he has no clue how to win or say the name Frank Reich. He confirmed it all. He confirmed it all for us right
well,
there.
Well done.
With one press conference. So we lay them to rest, the Carolina Panthers. And now Pete also, because I was working basketball last night, and he was like, I don't know, you'd be tired. You might not be able to come up with like 5 lines in a poem. So he came up with a poem.
Right.
But it's got a swear word in it. And as you know, I don't swear on this podcast.
Well, you might as well. It's your first. You did your first today. You might as well make it 2.
I don't want to do that.
All right.
You want to do it? So here's Pete's Requiem for a Team in the voice of Chris Sims.
Here we go. David Tepper is very rich, so his coach, he can easily switch. But he watches Stroud and mumbles aloud, "The Bryce is wrong, bitch."
Yeah, that was well done. Too early to tell.
That was nice rhyming there.
Too early to tell. Yeah, it just rhymed well. It just rhymed, and it was too good. Yeah, to be clear.
And "The Bryce is wrong, bitch" is from Happy Gilmore.
That I know.
Yeah.
That I do.
Yeah, I don't know if
Bob
you really
Barker.
Know.
Oh, I love Bob Barker.
Yeah. No, you haven't seen any of that movie either. You don't know.
I've seen many parts of that movie.
Many parts.
So this week, the Cardinals, the Patriots, and the Titans could all be eliminated. So I'm going to be in the shop writing some poems here.
So the Cardinals, the Patriots, and who was the other one? Titans, you said? Is that what you said?
Cardinals, Patriots, and Titans.
Wow. Okay.
Could all be eliminated here. Adam Blackhall, one more thing to say here. He goes, "I'm pretty sure Ahmed was subconsciously on the right track on Sunday night. The NFC South will not be won by a team. It will be lost by three teams." That's obviously why he stumbled over his delivery. That is true, right? No team will win the division. Three teams will lose it.
No, but we could be headed towards like something like we saw last year.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Tampa Bay won the division with a losing record and got to host a playoff home game, which is crazy. And that definitely could happen again here this year with the way the NFC South is. So we'll see where it goes. See if anybody can kind of take control. We got Bucks Falcons this weekend. So that'll be a little bit of a, you know, give us a little bit more of a gleam into who's going to take control there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we did it.
That was meaty. I feel like that was even more information than normally.
We did hit it all. I mean, everybody out there, homies, thanks for listening. As always, we appreciate your participation. And now because you listen to this podcast, you're definitely smarter than any of your other friends in football.
No doubt.
So feel free to parrot me or Ahmed on our great football takes and studying and all of that. Ahmed, thanks as always. Wore your cute little blue Detroit Lions sweatshirt today.
The Lions, 9-3.
In honor of Dan Campbell, right? You brought in a horrible energy drink that's got an ugly can. How dare you? So bad for you. Come on, you're better than that. All right, everybody else, continue to be better than Ahmed. All right, take care of yourself. You know where to find us Thursday. We got the Chris Sims PFTPM Chris Joint Picks podcast. I'll say again, knock on wood, I'm kind of en fuego right now with picks. Kind of, but knock on wood, we'll see if that can continue to going. I've stopped thinking so much and kind of just have gone into like... I know these teams, don't overthink it. Who do we think is going to win? And then come up with the reasons after that. So we'll see if I can continue that streak. I hope I didn't jinx myself. You know where to find us. Keep interacting. Appreciate all you homies. Have a good weekend. Enjoy Thursday Night Football. We'll see you. Peace out. Clap it up.
Clap it up.